morning, everybody. It's good to see you here today. My name is Austin Vondercheck. I'm the pastor here at Rosewood. If I haven't had a chance to meet you yet, I hope to do that soon. You can find me after service, usually lingering in this area here, and I'd be happy to meet you, pray with you, whatever it is that we need, even if it's just briefly. And if this is your first Sunday here, you're kind of coming in at the end of our series again and again. This is our fifth and final week of the series. I'm glad no one clapped to that you're like glad it's over. But what I'm sure you are sick of hearing is this. Through this series, we are going to choose one or two of these Christian disciplines or these habits whose real true value is in the repetition and the embodying them, not just doing them once or twice, but making them habits. And over the course of these 5 weeks, we're finishing up today, but we've looked at four, and now we'll look at the fifth habit or Christian discipline that we could consider adopting for 2019 and beyond. And to help us do that, we've provided in your bulletins, you'll see them there, there's a little sheet, a little quarter sheet, and that just has, if you've been around, you'll recognize those. Each of the weeks that we've gone through, each of the messages are really listed there. And what that is for you, if you choose to use it, is a physical reminder, because new habits are hard to really adopt, aren't they? It's difficult to keep kind of new habits or new ideas or new practices on the forefront of our mind and keep practicing them and not just fall into the status quo or fall into the way that we've always done something. And so that's for you to take home. And there's also going to be more after service where you picked up your bulletin. There's more that are there now that you can pick up if you'd like. They'll also be available next week. But that's just to help. Put that in a place where you'll see it. And again, do not choose more than two. It's hard enough to adopt even just one new thing into our life. So choose one or two. And once you feel like you have a good mastery of that they come more naturally to you, well, then you can move on to a third or a fourth or something like that. But don't bite off more than you can chew. Take on small things, because small things done continuously lead to big changes over time. And this Sunday, as we finish it up, we're talking about service. And this sermon, well, every sermon, the hardest part really is how to begin. Like, what are we going to talk about? What does God have in mind? What text are you going to use? All that kind of stuff is where you've got to begin. And this week, unfortunately, the week began a little odd. I worked from home on Monday, didn't come in, and I don't like to work from home. Some of you can do it. Some of you have like home offices where you can work from home. I don't know how you do it. There's too many distractions. Even when I went downstairs where there's literally nothing, I can't focus. I don't know how people do it. So here I am. I'm working on it the first day, trying to think, how are we going to start? Where do we even begin? And of course, there's nothing to distract me where I was working, except I was just staring out the window at snow. Nothing even changed out there. And I'm staring out the window, and I see our neighbor's driveway, which is covered in snow. It's like the driveway to the grass, like you didn't even know where the driveway was. It was just a flat line across there. And I thought to myself, and Leah mentioned it to me as well, like, you should go snowblow their driveway, because I love to snowblow. I really, really do. I love to snowblow, and I love to mow the grass, because both are like the same. And it's so satisfying for me to do that. However, this week, you know what it was like. Maybe you fell into this, where if you didn't keep up with the snow and you only had a shovel, you were in trouble. Like, you got to a point where it's like, well, I hope, I get out in the spring. And so our neighbors are like that. They don't have plow service. They don't have a snowblower. They just have a shovel. The husband works a lot. He has a very stressful job. His wife stays home with their two very active kids. For her to get out there and shovel the entire driveway is somewhat unrealistic. And so I'm looking out there at their driveway, and I thought to myself, boy, I would love, I'm not kidding, this is what I thought. I would love to go serve my neighbor, but I've got to write this sermon on service. And I didn't do it. I didn't snowblow their driveway. Oh, be quiet. You didn't snowblow your neighbor's driveway either. At least I have a sermon to show for it. I did it later, but I didn't do it then. But it was just so interesting because I said that and I thought it, and then later on I thought, wow, that really, like, maybe that's where the sermon needs to start. And I was brought back to another thought I had. There was one time recently where we have a one-story house, but we have this little loft, this kind of odd loft up above our living room. And I'd go up there and I read. And so I'm up there one day, I'm reading my Bible, and Leah, I hear Leah call. She wants me to just help her with something small, no big deal. So she presents me an opportunity to serve my wife, which is a great opportunity. And so she gives me that, but I'm up there reading my Bible, and I think to myself, well, dang it, I'm busy reading my Bible. Doesn't she know what I'm doing? I mean, here I am trying to get closer to God by reading His Word. I'm too busy doing such high, important, righteous things for me to descend the stairs to do such earthly, unimportant things like serve my wife. Well, now we start to see a pattern emerging in my life. And it's interesting because in my mind, in both of those situations, and I'm sure I could add more, you could add more for the record, so don't laugh too hard, that where for me, the problem was that I really misunderstood what it meant to please God, to honor God. My gut reaction to what it meant to please God was unfortunately just not right. And it was also present in the first disciples who Jesus called to follow Him and learn from Him. And probably the best example of such misconceptions was during the Passover feast, which today among Christian circles is known as the Last Supper. And unbeknownst to the disciples, at that meal, it would be the last evening that they would spend with Jesus, with their master, with their leader, and during that time together, during that evening, something happened. And here's what happened at the meal: a dispute also arose among them, the disciples, as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. Now, who doesn't want to know that? Who doesn't want to know who's the greatest? Who doesn't want to know if they're the greatest at whatever? Who doesn't want to know how they stack up? But I wonder, and the Bible doesn't say, but I wonder what criteria the disciples were using to determine who was the greatest, or to advocate that they themselves were greater than any other disciple. And we don't know what they said, but we could imagine. Maybe Peter spoke up first, because Peter always spoke up first. And Peter, you know, he would have said, well, you guys probably remember, I got out of the boat and I walked on water towards Jesus when we saw Him coming out of the fog. I got out of the boat. There is no, you can't deny that I am the greatest because I walked on water. Jesus called us to come, and I was the only one who got out of the boat. And then the rest of the disciples probably would have jumped on Him and said, oh, please, you started, but then you sank because you lost faith. You saw a wave coming. You were so distracted by the waves that you couldn't see Jesus anymore, and then you sank. And so then they bickered some more, and then eventually the four disciples, I'm just making this up perhaps, the four disciples who were fishermen, maybe they spoke up next, and they said, we are the greatest. We were called out of our careers. We left our nets and our boats. We don't even know where they are anymore. That was all we had, and it's gone now. We left those where they were to follow Jesus. We didn't even know He was the Messiah yet. He simply called, and we responded. We are the most faithful. We are the greatest. To which Matthew probably would have said, oh, please, you were poor, you smelled like fish. You were looking for a way out of that career path. I was a tax collector. I was rich. I had everything I could have wanted, and I left all of that to follow Jesus. And then they start bickering back and forth again. Judas is oddly quiet in this whole discussion. But what criteria do you use to measure greatness? What makes a person the greatest? What makes a person the greatest in your work, in your family, in the church, in faith? What is the criteria that we use? Well, Jesus said to them in response to them bickering, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one at the table or the one who serves?" He asks them a question. He quizzes them. Who's greater, the one at the table or the one who serves? Well, naturally, we would answer, and I imagine they would think, well, the one at the table is greater than the one serving those who are at the table. That would make the most sense. Well, Jesus continues, "Is it not the one who is at the table?" Okay. Easy question, easy answer. But then Jesus hits them with a curveball that breaks the mold of what they thought they knew. He says, "But I am among you as one who serves." Jesus flips this idea of greatness on its head. And this is so cool how Jesus makes the point. Yes, the person sitting at the table, and at this time they would have been sitting at the table, at a table. The person sitting at the table would be considered by the world's criteria to be the greatest, the most powerful, the most important, and certainly more so than the one who is serving. But then Jesus, whom the disciples call master and testify that he is the incarnate Son of God, creator and redeemer of the universe, he points out his own position, a position of servitude. The disciples amongst themselves are fighting over who gets to sit at the head of the table with Jesus. Meanwhile, Jesus doesn't even claim a spot. Greatness in the eyes of Jesus is not how popular, successful, good-looking, rich, whatever else you want to add to that list, you can become like you might be led to believe. Greatness isn't even who has read the most chapters out of their Bible, who spent the most time praying this week, who has the best church attendance. You can try to use all the criteria that you want to sit at the table of greatness, and you'll probably find a spot. But you won't stand with the Savior until you give up your seat and serve the world. And how frustrating this must have been for Jesus. I mean, put yourself in his position. Jesus knows that this is the last night that they're going to spend together. He knows that soon he is going to be brought to the cross, that he's going to be executed. The story doesn't end there, but he knows what's coming. And here they are, here he is with the men that he, through his Spirit, is going to continue his work in the world after he's gone. And they are bickering over who is the greatest. But that's not the only problem. They're fighting over the wrong things, but they're fighting over the wrong things twice. This isn't even the first time that they had fought over this, as recorded in the as recorded earlier with Jesus in Luke 9:46. The author noted that an argument started among the disciples as to which of them would be the greatest. This is a chronic issue. It's the second time now that they're fighting over the exact same thing. To which Jesus replied, "Whoever welcomes this little child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. For it is the one who is least among you who is the greatest." And on their last evening together, the disciples get into the exact same fruitless debate over who could possibly be the greatest. And maybe that's why Jesus did something quite unexpected at the meal. So fast forward again to the Last Supper. He did something that no one saw coming. What Jesus did was he went from the table, he got a bowl, and he got a towel. And he brought those things out, and he washed his disciples' feet. Now, last week, we talked about vomit and eating vomit. This week we talk about feet, but not just any feet. We're talking first century feet here. First century feet were gross. Today, if you get dirty, you take your shoes off and you take your socks off, and for the most part, you're clean, right? Generally speaking, you have clean feet. Now, back then, most people traveled barefoot, or if they had shoes, they wore sandals that were completely exposed to the elements and to the ground. So if you were a foot washer at a party, and that was a designated role, there would be a servant who would wash the feet of the people who were there, you were absolutely just solidly lowest on the totem pole socially. You were lowest on the totem pole. You were the most of the servants. You were the most servant. And this is why I think that Richard Foster wrote, he's an author who wrote this great book called The Celebration of Discipline, says that the physical symbol that most embodies the heart and the spirit of Christian service is the towel. And the towel calls us back to the story where Jesus not only taught about service, but he demonstrated it. He broke all the social norms and all of the things that you would think about greatness, that you would think that this leader, this master would do. He breaks all of those norms, and he demonstrates what true greatness in the kingdom of God is. This towel is a symbol that Jesus left the comforts of heaven and the glory of heaven to come to earth, to show us the way to a right relationship, to a restored relationship with God. But he didn't stop there. He took a towel and he kept descending further and further down until eventually he was not just eye level, but below eye level with his disciples. And he washed their nasty, disgusting feet. He took a towel and he became a servant. The master became a servant. And the towel is really the best symbol that we can think of what it means to be a servant, what it means to please God. We should do as Jesus did, serve. Not to consider any person anything less than another individual created in the image of God the Father in heaven. No matter what they look like, no matter what they sound like, their socioeconomic status, what side of the tracks they were born on, what side of the border they were born on. We are called to love and serve. Your time, your talents, your abilities, your listening ear, all of these are your towel. You each have a unique towel that you are called to take up and serve others with. I want to finish today with a little bit about something that's coming up that I'm excited about, and we'll get back to it and finish up here. So last summer, Caitlin Peterson, our director of children's ministries here at Rosewood, she started something called Summer of Service, SOS, as we shorten it too. And with SOS, what she did is she kind of created an opportunity, an open space each month where kids and their parents could come here to Rosewood and have their kids engage in service once a month, an opportunity to serve. You just had to come. You didn't have to bring anything. You just come. And we would help your kids find a place to serve. Now, I'm very excited that we're going to kind of stand on the shoulders of Caitlin and the volunteers and the leaders who made that happen. And we're bringing Summer of Service in for 2019, but we're expanding it. So the coming up behind me here is going to be the schedule here. And you don't need to write these down yet, but you certainly may. If you're around, you're going to be hearing a lot more about these as the dates get closer. But on June 3rd, the first Monday, these are all Monday dates, will be a vision night to talk more details. For one, I don't have all the details, and I'm not going to try to talk at you and get everything out today. But on the 10th, 17th, and 24th of June, those are going to be the nights that are kid or family friendly. They're going to have service opportunities that your kids can easily grasp. Parents will have to stick around here because or stay with their kids because a lot of times we're not just going to be here. We might meet here, but we're going to go elsewhere. And then through July, the 5 weeks in July, those are going to be more geared towards adults. Now, kids are certainly welcome to come. However, we're not going to be quite as kid-friendly thinking in the way that we organize some of these service opportunities. And this is going to be a great opportunity for us as a church to serve our community, to go out into our community and serve in a variety of ways so that you can discover what your towel is. You can discover your gifting, the things that make you excited, the things that break your heart, the places that God is calling you to serve. But that's like 5 months away, right? Don't wait until then. Programmed service like SOS is meant to help you and help all of us see the ordinary everyday life, because that's most of what life is, right? Just ordinary. It's meant to help us see that ordinary life, every minute of the day, is an opportunity to serve in the world, that everyday life is our mission field. And something like SOS is not meant to replace it. And unfortunately, that's kind of what the church has become in some ways, is like, okay, pastor, tell us how to serve. Tell us what team to be a part of. Well, I don't know. Tell me about your neighbor. Tell me about your coworkers. Tell me about your friends at school. Tell me about that, and then I'll get behind you. Summer of Service is an opportunity for us to practice for all of the other days of the week. It's to prepare us for service by giving you field experience. And if you feel the pull of the soul to practice service again and again, then take up your towel. Whatever that might be for you, your talents, your abilities, your strengths, your passions, your possessions, your money, your mad cooking skills, all of those things are your towel to serve the world. But this is just one habit of many that we've considered in the course of a month. So which one will you choose, or which two will you choose to carry into 2019 and beyond? As you think about that, as you consider what God is calling you to, let me pray for you. Jesus, give us a boldness to serve, first off. God, you took on the form of a servant. God, you are the King of Kings. You came as the King, and yet the King chose to serve. And how, in some ways, odd that is. God, you broke the mold on what it meant to lead. You broke the mold on what it meant for us to live, Jesus. So God, the part of us that seeks to be great by the world's standards, God, help us to put that to death in ourselves, to give up that part and instead begin to think less about what the world can give us and more about what we can give the world. Jesus, you died for the entire world, not just the righteous, not just the clean, not just the perfect, but God, you died for the entire world. So God, give us a heart to serve the world, and each of us can't do everything, but each of us can do a little bit. And so God, help us to identify our towels, the things, our abilities, our talents, our things that you've given us, God, that we can use for your glory, that we can take up and serve another person or another family or another group in humility. And Jesus, help us to be attentive to your word, to your voice, as we discover what it is that you're calling us to in 2019. God, who are we meant to be, and what do you want to use to get us there? God, whether it be service or worship or time with you or confession or any number of disciplines and things that we can do again and again, God, draw us into that. Give us what we need in order to practice those things. And Jesus, begin to transform us. Continue to transform us into the people that you have called us to be. God, we love you. You comfort us. You also challenge us. And we are thankful for both. And it's in your name that we pray. Amen.